Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Kelly, it might end up being a record low number of Raw viewers, given the NFL game going on opposite of it, an actual Monday night NFL playoff game featuring, you know, what could be Tom Brady's last game. Certainly a marquee matchup with the Cowboys in action against the Bucks. But I thought for the audience that watched, they got a pretty good sales pitch for Raw 30 next week. One of the big things that stood out, besides setting up through a main event six-man elimination match that Bobby Lashley won, to face Austin Theory, they also established a cage match with Bayley versus Bianca Belair. But also legends showing up, Ric Flair among them, Shawn Michaels, Sean Waltman. Don't have lists in front of me, but I'm looking. Oh, here it is. Kurt Angle, Jerry Lawler, Teddy Long, the Bellas, Ron Simmons, Road Dogg, and Undertaker. I don't know in what way they're going to be featured, but that's a pretty good lineup, too, that I think once word spreads will cause people to tune in for Raw 30. I think the biggest question, Kelly, is does Vince McMahon dare appear in person on the 30th anniversary of the show that he introduced alongside Rob Bartlett, I think was his name, yelling about how uncooked Raw would be forever, even though it's turned out to be very, very cooked. Kelly, your thoughts on the job they did hyping Raw 30 in the lineup for next week?
Wow, you threw me those names. You threw me Rob Bartlett. Lots to try to unpack here. I hadn't thought about Rob Bartlett in a while. You know, I thought he was the height of comedy when I was like 13 years old. found out he wasn't, but what are you going to do? He was a big fan of exposing the business, was Rob Bartlett. He literally said, I thought you told me Mr. Perfect was going to win. That's a real thing he said.
Kelly, yeah. When I was 13, I thought Emo Phillips was the greatest comedian ever, and that turned out to be true, and he's still going strong.
And he's still funny. He's got a way with a pun where you're like, I'm supposed to be mad at him for a pun like this.
His Twitter feed is so good.
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah, and, you know, my introduction to him was UHF. I had no idea
dude
did really, really strong. Yeah, and, UHF, I was 12, 13 when that came out, so I didn't know that he had these great shows out there. Now he's in my semi-regular rotation. I eat up a lot of stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Probably.
And there's a compilation of him, Emo Phillips, on Letterman in the early 80s that people don't know what we're talking about. I should see him. I know there's a big movement for him to get a Netflix special. He's touring worldwide right now with Weird Al. I saw Emo this summer in Duluth, Minnesota, in fact. But anyway, go ahead, Kelly.
I did not. You know, if you'd thrown to me earlier, I would have said something about all the football fans missing Elias versus Omos. But you're right. This was a pretty good show and a pretty good sale. you know, and they could have just focused on the Rumble here. And they made a few steps towards the Rumble here. But yeah, I have not watched Raw live and sat down for 3 hours for it in a long time. It is very rare I get to do Raw with you. I'm normally not available on Monday nights. This was a big exception. So it kind of worked out. But
yeah,
I haven't sat down and watched the full 3 hours in a long time. And they didn't lose me here. I didn't find myself trying to wander with my brain. I enjoyed what we saw tonight as a go-home for two different shows.
Yeah. Well, we got a lot of topics to talk about, not just what's coming up next week on Raw 30, but also what they just did tonight to forward existing storylines. One of them was the main event. The main event was a six-pack challenge. Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, The Miz, Dolph Ziggler, Bobby Lashley, Baron Corbin took up the last nearly half hour of the program. I thought they had good action, told a good story. Omos came to ringside, MVP got involved. Kelly, just what's your impression of the main event?
Yeah, I thought it was perhaps a little obvious that one of our two baby faces would win. And the two, there were only two baby faces and they got all the eliminations. But that said, even though, you know, Miz and Ziggler are probably going first and maybe Corbin, and that was your big surprise that he lasted to last three. But yeah, I thought this was spirited. I thought this was fun. And I thought they sowed some decent doubt by having the two baby faces go final two. The most realistic guys who could, I mean, they could have just made it Corbin and just made it obvious that, that Theory's going to keep being the champion, but they really added some doubt to this. And I think set a pretty good hook, now that Theory's been booked as strongly as he has. And, I think this is a pretty good hook for next week.
Yeah. Seth and Lashley were the two most believable winners. Because it's not a pay-per-view match next week, there, you know, you could have talked yourself into thinking, oh, maybe Finn Balor or maybe Corbin or Ziggler or Miz. But, you know, probably not. They were there to help fill some time and take some bumps and tell the story. And they did. Seth and Lashley, the two biggest stars in this match, both had big moments in this match. And in the end, unfortunately, I get, you know, why they did it within the way that they normally book, MVP's distraction led to Lashley catching Seth unexpectedly with a spear to get the three count. But yeah, I mean, I thought one memorable thing, and this is a little bit, this it doesn't involve even two people officially in the match. Austin Theory on commentary, I thought was really good. And then when Omos went to choke slam Austin Theory on the announce table, everybody's been a victim of that. I don't know. I mean, I don't recall anyone escaping Omos's grip. Theory did. He landed on his feet. And escaped getting choke slammed on the table. And, you know, that's something WWE does. It's sort of baked into the culture of how they book these angles. Those things tend to matter. And it says we're not just going to have, at this stage of where Theory is, we're not going to have him just get crushed by Omos. They had Omos crush some pretty big names, Orton and Riddle along the way, if I recall correctly. But they protected him a little bit there. And so that was, no, I don't think it's like a big deal in terms of, oh, it's going to set up Theory against Omos. Not at all. But they wanted that moment with Omos to be lifting Theory, but he didn't get to slam him through the table. They are protecting Theory quite a bit. Kel, you've watched Austin Theory throughout his whole NXT run. Talk about what you thought of him on commentary, his body language, the main event vibe he's trying to establish, and just – how you feel about his push? I mean, he's one of the centerpieces of Raw 30 next week.
You know, the guy can do buffoonish comedy. Like, we knew that from what he brought to The Way. That doesn't always translate to being a more serious character. Some folks are just made to be Santino Marella, and that's all they can do. And that brings value, but it was always going to be interesting to me to see what they did with him, because he was straightforward when they first brought him in before he became a member of The Way and they decided to make him dumb. But they didn't really give him, they didn't strap the rocket pack to him at that point. So we didn't really know what he could do. It's kind of like watching a different act entirely. And they could have just lazily put him right back there with Johnny and Candace and made that work. Like, he could have been of value to the show, but instead we have a champion who not only doesn't lose all his non-championship matches, but also doesn't get destroyed every second just to set up future things, which is refreshing because this company likes to have their champions historically get destroyed a lot. So I think he is one of the, I don't know, five biggest beneficiaries of different creative. And it's funny that you would say that about this guy, because Vince would love everything about this guy and gave him a championship, but then immediately fell back on those tropes of just put the champion through the ringer at every chance possible. And he had no credibility for a long time. It's really impressive, this reclamation project.
Oh, anything else jump out in the main event tonight that you want to mention?
I don't know. I I guess what jumped out at me was how much fun it was. I thought it was fairly paint by numbers as far as a booking standpoint. I wasn't overly surprised by who got eliminated when. Yeah, I mean, if I had booked it myself, Corbin maybe goes a little earlier, but I don't have any issues with the way it worked out. I certainly took note of Omos, who, I mean, this is his night. He came back tonight, so mm-hmm. It would have been – I wouldn't have batted an eye at the fact that he had destroyed Theory. But, yes, I certainly took note that he didn't get that moment. Omos is – he's got a lot of work to do if I'm going to care about him at all. I'm very interested to see if something new is there in the way of moveset, in the way of presentation. He's got a different gear, so I guess there's that, in what he can do on the mic, if anything, in who they'll pair with him. I wasn't looking forward to Omos's return, but now that he's here, I'm interested to see what more he can do.
Yeah. All right, well, let's pause and formally introduce ourselves and give out the phone numbers and emails and move on to other topics. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, January 16th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch. And I thank you for joining us today. I am joined by Kelly Wells from the PWT Talks NXT and the NXT 8 Years Back podcast. And he covers NXT in rotation on pwtorch.com every Tuesday night. Kelly, welcome back to the Coast Chair on a rare Monday.
Yes, good to be here. Good to, you know, I've jumped into Raw with you just a few times over the past few years because normally it's not a good night for me. And it just seems like I jump in at nights where you are praising the show as being abnormally strong. So perhaps a monthly date is in order, just to make sure that this show stays strong. It's good to be here as always.
And this could have easily been a show that they just phoned in. And when you see Six Pack Challenge, you kind of think maybe they're going to phone it in. But they really wanted to hype Raw 30. They wanted to make some news and get people excited about it. And I think they did a nice job with that. So we'll get into that as the show progresses. Everybody, give us a call. Our number, if you're live streaming the show, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Many of you might be having your eye on the football game. I've got it on in the background, too, just watching Tom Brady opposite the Cowboys. It's a big deal. If tune me out for 10 seconds if you hate the game and are listening to this, because I have a spoiler. But even if the game isn't particularly close, although I didn't think Brady thought he's going to get on the field again, and here he is with a onside kick successful with 2 minutes left. So who knows if he can score 17 points in 2 minutes? I'll be impressed. Even if that's on in the background, give us a call. If you followed along on Raw or got thoughts on next week's lineup and the big names who are returning, and you can be part of the show that way. Another way is by emailing us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Kelly, before we move to our first caller, which will be William in San Diego, he's up first, just giving him a heads up. Tell us more about your podcast that you do for on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup that everybody can listen to for free, and also the VIP exclusive show.
That is PWT Talks NXT on the Torch. You can listen to us to talk about NXT every week. Had a PLE this week. Lots of different pieces moving forward and championships. I don't know. You saw the show, folks. I didn't get to be there last week because of a situation in the family, but I will be there this week, and we will talk about the new direction. I'm always – NXT usually does their best TV coming out of a PLE, so I'm looking forward to that next one. On VIP, you can listen to NXT – what do we call that? NXT 8 Years Back. where we're looking at, we are in Sami Zayn's very brief championship run right now. So listen to us talk about that before Kevin Owens takes over the whole damn show. Come for the wrestling, stay for the wild tangents and movie talk that Tom Staupe and I go through.
Yeah, if you need a movie list for the weekend or some movies you might not have heard of or don't, aren't sure what to watch, that is a place to go, oddly enough, for some good suggestions on movies to stream at home. All right, very good. Well, I mentioned William is up first, so let's get started on phone calls and emails, and we'll see where our listeners lead us. William from San Diego, you're up first. Thanks for calling. Welcome. Not a great weekend for your old Chargers or my Vikings, your old Chargers and my Vikings this weekend. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Just on the record, they were never my Chargers. More of a baseball fan, so at least I got the Padres to look forward to in a few months. Thank you for taking my call. Want to talk first about the Becky and Bayley segment. I thought it was an odd week for the two of them at the beginning, at least. I feel like the back and forth that they had. With the whole Karen thing and, oh, that's not my name. And it's Mickey, taking a minute or two trying to explain, the whole thing was just pretty bad. But I think at the end, they've landed in a pretty good spot. And they seem to get the crowd excited for the match next week. So, what do you guys think of the segment?
I thought it was solid enough. It had some ups and downs. I mean, the Karen thing is kind of, it feels a little old now, like a sort of, kind of a cool thing to, I don't know if cool is a word, but a little fresher to bring up. I don't know when it first started becoming popular, but, the freshness date feels a little past due right now as sort of an edgy joke or insult. That said, Bayley does come across as that term has been used. I thought acknowledging their past in NXT is a good hook, because I think that's what people think of when they see them, is a lot of fans, and if they don't, it's good to educate fans on the fact that they came up through NXT together. Kelly, what did you think of that in particular? It's good to have you on to analyze that. What did you think of the segment, and what did you think about the way that they pulled from their history there?
Love being able to talk about this, but 8 years and half a week ago, these two went one-on-one for the first time on NXT TV. So it jumped back. And by the way, their first match together was good. These two just had it figured out very early. I thought this segment was two women giving A-minus, B-plus performances of C-minus material. I, too, think that Karen is passe. And if you're going to use it, and I get it because that's her gimmick, over-explaining it doesn't make it work better. I don't know why wrestling feels the need to do it. Well, I know a lot of wrestling fans. I know why they do it. But you can still do the angle, do the character, and not have to over-explain this, and it will still work. So it seemed like they could have gotten to where they were going a little bit earlier. The two of them made it work because they're both very good at this. The match obviously will deliver, but the segment was okay. It was nice to see two women I like. Let's say that's the best thing I can say about this segment.
It seemed like they were more than seemed like there was acknowledgement of Bayley being in a rut, and you can say, oh, that's a storyline thing, but Bayley's bragging about a win over her. So, it's not really a storyline rut. It's a rut in terms of how people like us have been reviewing Bayley's work since she returned after doing such stellar work as a character during the Performance Center era. It's just been, kind of flat and bumpy for us so far. And Becky was acknowledging that. Does that work, Kelly? Do you like that? Or should they not be sending mixed signals about there's a rut, but she also has a win over you?
I think it's a dangerous game, but I also think it's fair game if it's true. I mean, if we're all noticing it, then what are they going to do but bring that up? I feel like they're actually giving fans a little bit of credit, which I just said they don't do very often, by acknowledging that something is not clicking about Bailey's act, about damage control, even though on paper I adore this this trio. I love each of them individually. Some of my very favorite wrestlers in the world, actually. So, but you can't – even I notice that there is something that has not clicked week to week, and besides the – hot shotting of the tag titles and everything that they've done over and over. I think that they almost have to acknowledge this. But it's dangerous how far you go down that road to allow Bailey to maintain a strong sense of credibility.
All right, let's go back to William for either follow up on that or a different topic.
Yeah, just real quick on the Karen thing, because that was also kind of, I'm wondering, you know, when it became popular and if it, why it felt so outdated. I think it was around 2020, from what I can put together from what I looked up on the internet. And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, 2020 isn't really like that long ago. But when you're talking about, you know, internet memes, that does kind of make it a little outdated. So, yeah, there we go. I also want to talk about Seth Rollins and Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes announcing that he's going to be coming back in time for the Rumble. And we've seen Rollins firmly planted as a babyface in the past few weeks. So how do you think they'll handle that whole situation? Because the last time we saw them together, obviously, Rollins was a heel. And not only was he a heel, there was this he was the one who, you know, he doubled down as a heel and, like, basically gave him a bad beat down on his way out. You know, they did this whole swerve angle where it looked like Seth Rollins was going to acknowledge him or show him some respect or something, but he just doubled down as a heel, like I mentioned. So how do you reconcile the two things, Seth Rollins being a popular babyface right now, Cody Rhodes coming back and there being that history that I think they have to acknowledge and kind of explore?
Yeah. First of all, Kelly, what do you think of them announcing Cody ahead of time when everybody sees these videos and goes, well, of course he's going to be there. So is it better to just, yeah, Cody's going to be here and just go, yeah, we're not going to pretend we don't know that. Or is it better to have a little bit of doubt and have him be a surprise entrant? Do you have strong feelings either way on that?
I wouldn't call my feelings strong, but I don't mind them announcing him here. It's not a very well-kept secret anyway. Everybody expected it anyway, so I don't feel too badly about this one coming in. I mean, and if he wins, then I feel like not announcing him even to be in the match almost was a spoiler, because they've done the, holy cow, I can't believe this guy came back right on schedule and won the Royal Rumble. They've done that like 5-6 times. So I don't mind them bringing him in. For me, it actually creates more doubt over whether he can win. And I certainly think he's one of the two or three guys who can win this match. As for the alignment issue of Seth Rollins and Cody Rhodes, if Cody's coming back babyface, and I certainly think that he probably is, and it wouldn't be a good idea for him not to, maybe you have these characters acknowledge each other. Maybe you have Cody acknowledge that at some point they can get back to this, and maybe you ignore it altogether. But I don't think a match between these two as faces serves them well at all unless one of these two guys wins the Royal Rumble, and they are two of the guys that are most likely to win it, and they defend that chance at the championship against the other in between the Rumble and Mania. I just don't think a match serves either well right now because Cody needs to be red hot, and Seth is hotter than he's been in quite a while.
Yeah, I'm really curious what they have in mind for it, because this is not ideal to have a grudge match waiting to happen for Cody, you know, when he comes back, but to have the landscape change like this. And, you know, I mean, they've talked about, you know, having issues with each other, but mutual respect for each other. And they can, you know, play that up and have a match and then end up with a common enemy or somebody else interfering that steers them away from each other. So we'll see. I mean, again, it's not ideal, but I don't think you want to fight your commitment to Seth being a babyface, and they decided to go that direction with him just for a match with Cody, especially if it comes across as if it's another instance where Cody might be against somebody more popular than him. That really hurt him in AEW. And Cody should be either against a heel who fans don't like or a babyface who fans also like, but you're not trying to steer them away from cheering both wrestlers. And if Seth and Cody face each other, but fans are allowed to cheer both, I think that prevents Cody from being booed. And I think the WWE audience looks at Cody differently than the AEW audience did. There was a lot that happened with Cody and AEW that kind of led things to go off track. Those things are not present in WWE. And, you know, it might happen with Cody. I mean, Cody's a peculiar personality, and you know, there's a chance over time there'll be some bad booking decisions or some missteps on his part that'll lead to fans tiring of him or pushing for him to go heel. But that has not happened yet, and it's not inevitable. So I think they can have a one-off babyface matchup and have it heated and kind of do what Moxley and Hangman did last week in AEW. You know, you can pick who you want to cheer, and then they fight it out viciously, and then they both move on. I'll throw back to William for follow-up on anything Kelly or I said or any other topic you want to bring up.
Yeah, I agree. That's kind of where I was leaning, going with the babyface match. I don't think it'd be the worst thing for the two of them. But another topic that I want to talk about is where do you think they're heading with the Alexa Bliss character? Because, I mean, this maybe I'm reading too much into it, but she came out with a new version of her theme song, and I think they normally, they want to save that for if she had, like, a big character change coming up. You know, if they had something bigger planned for her, I feel like they would have just, why bother, just save it for when she goes back to being the female fiend or whatever her new gimmick is going to be. But with the new music, it feels like maybe this is it. Like, they're settling into this being her character and, you know, not so much going back to the creepy Lily doll stuff that she used to do when she was with Bray Wyatt.
Yeah, Kelly, I want to get your thoughts on that. Also, just as a sidebar, I want to know, did you think that woman in the front row holding the Lily doll was a plant who was going to be involved in the angle when they first fought over the barricade? I don't know if you noticed, but she was just standing there jumping up and down, cheering for Bliss, and I'm like, this has to be a plant. This is totally going to be something. And it didn't. They just brawled past her, and it just happened to be a fan of the Lily doll right there.
I did notice, and it did cross my mind.
Because it wasn't just a fan who blended in. Like, it was a fan who stood out right there, front and center, with a Lily doll. Yeah, it was peculiar. But maybe she'll reappear next week. Maybe she'll be around a lot, and it is the beginning of something, and they're playing long ball with it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, certainly they've brought in fans 3-4 times, and then we realized, oh, they were on the payroll the whole time. That is something they've done, but I don't know. I don't think so. I had a few weird fan moments tonight, but I don't know what that's going to be. So as far as what Alexa is, where she's headed, oh my gosh, whenever there is creepy Bray Wyatt stuff involved, I just don't even typically try to predict where they're going. Because it's always so, I don't know if I want to say non sequitur, but Bray does the interview stuff that doesn't necessarily always make sense. It's like a half step up from Ultimate Warrior stuff. So I don't know. I think, too, that the music is a signal that we're going somewhere. Although I would say, then why not just wait for the change to happen and then do the music change? But I guess they want to gas her up because they are giving her that championship match with Bianca Belair. So I don't know if this is something that's supposed to pay off next week or if part of the hook for the Royal Rumble match is going to be this thing, whatever could come of this with Bianca Belair there. So I don't know. It just seems like Alexa has treaded so much water. So I'm hoping it's something big because at her best, Alexa is very good.
All right, William, back to you. Anything else you want to bring up?
The last thing I wanted to talk about, was the Hurt Business storyline that we saw throughout the show. What do you guys think of having Cedric and Shelton lose? This is just a way to further the storyline of, that maybe they really need Bobby Lashley there. If not, they're not, I don't know, it doesn't work or... where do you think they're heading with Bobby? Is he ultimately going to end up back with the Hurt Business, or are they maybe heading towards a feud where, he tried to tell MVP politely that he doesn't want to go back to the Hurt Business, and he wouldn't listen. We saw him tonight in the main event, and maybe, he's going to have to tell them, not so politely, in a more forceful way.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings on this because, one, I really liked Hurt Business. And I thought they had a good thing, and I wish they had stayed together and kept them strong. So I'll say that. With Lashley, I'm at a point where, I don't like saying this, but I just don't care all that much either way what they do with him because he's pretty good as a babyface. He's better as a heel, but I think they've gone too far down the road of him being a babyface, where if he turns heel, which is a better role for him, I think he certainly is a more compelling character as a heel, playing off of MVP. I think they work together well, but it's just one turn too many. So, like, to get Lashley into the spot that I like him best in, it's one turn too many, or I don't know if it's even a turn, but moving, kind of floating back and forth character-wise. But if he stays a face, I don't know if I'm going to be really excited about him as an act, as a face. And it's not like I dread him or anything like that. It just seems like the last, last year, unfortunately, I think Bobby's lost the chance to be a major breakout character just because of mixed signals and inconsistency, both in how he's been framed and pushed and booked and also just in his performances. I think he comes across as a star. I think you can drop him into a big-time match, but I don't think he comes across as he's either a one good babyface feud or one turn in reuniting with MVP away from being particularly compelling, exciting, and relevant at a higher level than just sort of a legacy star floating around being a top-tier guy but not a top guy. And so – that's where I'm. And then as far as Shelton and Cedric go, they just have lost too much. And for me to be disappointed they lost again, I think in a way they just pull Hurt Business down. I think if they do bring Hurt Business back together again, maybe it's, I don't know. I mean, you could go in various directions, but maybe Omos stays heel, MVP goes face, teams becomes Lashley's advisor, and then they bring in a couple other guys as a tag team who are fresh. And then, they go through Cedric and Shelton, who are bitter about not being brought back. I mean, there's a number of things you can do, but, I mean, nothing excites me all that much right now because I think they had a good thing going. They derailed it, and it's just this sort of a mess. But I'm open to seeing if they can pull it off. Those are my thoughts. Kelly, how about yours?
You need a Big Show or a Kane who you can move to one side of the ledger to the other the moment somebody else is a new champion, and you need a strong face or a strong heel. You just turn Big Show or Kane, and you have that person. I don't think they want – maybe Bobby Lashley will settle into that role, but they want to try everything they can to make him a superstar before they do that. And for that reason, I, too, think they're committed to him as a face, although I, too, am much more interested in him as a heel, or at least as a more – I don't know. It's not like he was doing all that many heelish things when he was with MVP. He just left that to MVP. Just more of a prize fighter, more of a tough guy. And I'd prefer that role for him. But even if he doesn't turn, which I don't want to see happen yet, I wouldn't mind seeing some teases with MVP that could maybe add some sizzle to his matches and to his TV here for the next couple of months before it's definitively spoken that Bobby Lashley has no interest in going back to MVP.
All right, very good. William, do you have a vote for how you want it to go?
I think that's everything I had. So thank you guys for taking the call. Have a good one.
All right, okay. Thanks, William. All right, our number, if you're just joining us after the football game, it's 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. We will move next to – we'll go to Brad in Florida. Brad, thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight about Raw?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Kelly. Thanks for taking the call, guys.
Sure thing.
You know, yeah, like you guys, I thought it was a really good show, and it's, you know, it's kind of ironic that – Raw has really lucked out, and I hate to use the word lucked out with, you know, what happened with the, you know, Damar Hamlin. Thank God he's okay, so I feel like it's okay to say that. But, you know, they had a Monday night game 3 weeks ago that was basically canceled in the first quarter. Then they had a blowout national championship game for college football last Monday, which was not even worth watching.
Yeah.
And then they got a blowout football game tonight, a playoff game that really wasn't worth watching unless you're – you know, a fan of one of the teams, or you had some sort of bet on the over or something like that. But it's they really did get lucky, because I, you know, you kind of thought this might be a tough night for them ratings wise, and, you know, not that that's everything, but just something to think about that I found interesting that they kind of got that 3 weeks in a row. So, you know, I thought that the main event was really great, but one of the things that actually was brought up last by William that was during that Bailey segment, when he was talking about it, just kind of jarred my memory. Did you guys notice that Bailey said, you know, I don't need EO and Dakota at all. I don't need them. I don't need them for anything. She said it like three or four times. And then at one point, Dakota was kind of like, what? You know, she kind of gave a look like, you don't need us kind of thing. And that's when, you know, it kind of just got off track where she accepted the cage match and off we went, and nothing really became of that. But I'm wondering if you guys think that there is a possibility that that line, or that's maybe a foreshadowing of Bailey basically not being a part of Damage Control long term, and maybe they do shift course and move her away from that into something else. Because I think it's, you know, if it is working, it's certainly not working that great, in my opinion, Damage Control. And I just wanted your guys' thoughts on that, and if that meant nothing, or if that meant something like sort of subtly, but if it did mean something in your opinion.
Yeah. So, Kelly, talk about that, and just also what you think of Damage Control as a group, and the use of those NXT names.
Yeah, I do love all three of them as solo performers, and continue to be baffled as to why it doesn't quite click the way it just seems like they're always halfway committed to this group, that they want them to win, but they got other people to push at the same time. They could certainly do a split from Bailey to the other two. Dakota can talk primarily as a heel, but she's an okay talker as a face. And EO doesn't do a lot of talking, but she's actually pretty great when she is more of a straight man, smart-ass, sarcastic partner to somebody who's more bubbly and happy and straightforward, babyface. So they could certainly do that if they wanted. I thought maybe the reason they did this was to set up like a tease for the Rumble. Maybe all three of these are in, and they have that moment where do the two of them take out Bailey because she's a real threat to win? Like, maybe they take out Bailey and then immediately some baby faces take out them. If anything comes to this, I would expect it to be more short-term than long-term, specifically for the Rumble. I feel like it could foreshadow a Rumble spot, but maybe nothing else.
I think that makes as much sense as anything. Would you be okay with them trying to make it work over time, Kelly, and that they're still together a year from now, and that there's potential to turn it into a successful faction, or would you like to see it not a short-term storyline for the Rumble, but kind of move away from them being together? Is there more potential with Kai and Sky separate from Bayley, or do they need to be with her longer to amplify what that potential is?
I watch more New Japan than anything, and I can tell you that it is way harder to rehabilitate a faction without changing personnel than it is a single person. It just feels like it's so much work to rebuild fan interest in a faction that has lost steam. And I don't know why it is exactly, but it just seems like it's such a tough thing to do. I don't think that this faction's dead in the water exactly, but I wouldn't be against a 1-2 split here, or even a 1-1-1, but I think Dakota and Io work well enough together, or I've seen enough of their acts in NXT to know what they could do without Bayley there doing the majority of their talking and their hype. I don't know that I knew that I was ready for this split to happen, but maybe I am.
Yeah. All right. Brad, back to you.
Yeah. That's interesting, guys. Like almost like a mini or a bigger version of what happened on NXT with Toxic Attraction this past week, where, you know, they're in the Battle Royal together and they end up turning on each other in the end. And, you know, maybe something like that does happen at the Rumble with that. I didn't even think of that, but it's a great point. You know, on Alexa Bliss and Bianca, I'm very intrigued by this. And the reason why is out of all of the title matches that are going to happen at Royal Rumble, whether it's, you know, Roman versus Kevin Owens, like if something happens with Charlotte, which I imagine it will, I find this to have the most realistic possibility of the belt actually changing, because I don't think, you know, Charlotte's going to lose it. She just got it. I don't think that Roman's going to lose to Kevin Owens, but I could see a scenario where this Uncle Howdy thing gives Alexa the strength or the distraction or one of the other, or maybe even attacks Bianca. We haven't seen the guy's face or even who it is. For all we know, it's a woman. I mean, I don't think it is, but I mean, you know, to give her the power to overcome Bianca. And to me, that one's not as cut and dry as the others are, in terms of what we're going to see at Rumble. So I do find it intriguing, and I do find, you know, those segments to be very good. And I actually thought this week's segment was very good with them. I do want to hear you guys talk a little bit more about it. But the other thing that I wanted to say quickly was, you know, I think that the main event tonight proves why we're long overdue for a WWE draft. I just think that, you know, like we've seen Lashley versus, you know, Theory before. We saw it at Money in the Bank. I think that's what it was, where, correct me if I'm wrong, but where Theory lost the belt to Lashley and then went on to win the Money in the Bank. But we saw that, you know, 6 months ago. We've seen three-way matches with Rollins and Theory and all different iterations of that and Lashley for months. And now, you know, we're going to have a Lashley versus Theory matchup at Raw 30, which is fine, and it's a very good matchup, but, you know, I just think it needs a shakeup. Like, you'd love to see, you know, instead of, you know, Lashley, maybe Lashley's on SmackDown and you have Drew McIntyre as that person or whatever it is. Like, I just think it would be, it's long overdue and it's very needed on the shows, even with the tag teams, and I do want your thoughts on that. And then the Raw's 30 card looks incredible. I mean, it looks like, I didn't expect it to not be good, but going into this week, there really wasn't much of a sense of what was coming, and they really are throwing a lot at this. I mean, you're going to have The Undertaker, you're going to have, you know, big-time matchups, championship match after championship match, and you're going to have just a lot going on. It looks like a great card, cage matches, and I'm very impressed at how quickly they threw this all together tonight and threw this at us. So I do want your thoughts on that. But, yeah, on the change, like, I just feel like it's so needed. Like, I feel like a draft is needed. And when do you think that's going to come? And do you guys feel that way as well?
Yeah. I think doing it after WrestleMania works well for me. Especially, I mean, you have the whole WrestleMania backlash thing with rematches for Mania, and then you have that weird period where everyone's on every brand, and I don't like that, and I'd be fine if they did away with that. They could also delay the draft until after that and do a summer draft. But, you know, one of the benefits of having a roster split is that you have a staleness that can be resolved by reshuffling the roster. And absolutely, giving each show a fresh look and giving wrestlers fresh opponents is something I'm looking forward to. I mean, the fact that the Bloodline are appearing on both shows, you know, adds some crossover and breaks up the roster split somewhat from being a hard split. But that said, as since the Usos are champs of both brands, and you know, the people who appear on both shows are affiliates of the undisputed dual champions, I can live with that. There's some other crossovers that they just don't draw a lot of attention to or want to explain, but it's not egregious. But yeah, it'll freshen things up. Kelly, what do you think about what Brad had to say?
Yeah, the only thing I have against drafts at this point in my life is that my memory isn't what it once was, and it's hard enough for me to remember who's on what show. That's my only downside to the draft. But I think in general, it is good time for one. I still like a little bit of consistency, like the first few drafts where it was just like everybody got drafted, I thought were kind of messy, and there was a lot of growing pains there. But a small amount, 15% of your main roster changing to the other side, I think can really freshen up a lot of things, and more than they think with just with that small of a change. So I guess I didn't have draft on the brain, but maybe I should be thinking about one.
It's not this would not be a good time to do it. You know, you've got WrestleMania programs and months of buildup and stuff. So, you know, it's not premature to talk about it, but it would be premature to think about them doing it anytime before, you know, May. And honestly, I'd be fine if they just decided to try to make summer a little more relevant by, you know, and SummerSlam comes up quicker than usual. So SummerSlam could be very fresh if they did a late May draft and sort of booked around that. But yeah, I mean, we still got the Rumble in front of us to keep us occupied in the meantime. And we'll see a lot of intermixing of wrestlers there where some seeds could be planted for post-draft feuds too later in the year. Brad, anything else you want to bring up?
Well, the last thing is, do you guys think there's a possible, like, I get it, Cody Rhodes, he's coming back at the Royal Rumble. Awesome. Amazing. Everyone thought that. Do you think there's a chance we see him next week at this Raw is 30 live? Because, I mean, now that we know he's coming back at the Rumble, why not have him come back?
You don't think so? It's a good point. It's a good point because that would be a tipping point for them to have to reveal he'll be at the Rumble, is to just go, well, we want him on Raw. Now, if they want him on Raw, they could advertise him for Raw, and then if he's a draw, that would make a difference in the viewership. But maybe that's the surprise. You don't get a surprise Cody at the Rumble. You get an unannounced surprise of Cody on Raw. It's going to be a crowded show. So do you want Cody crowded out? But, you know, you can carve out a few minutes to make that seem important. I wouldn't rule it out. I don't think it's a bad idea, especially if it gives him a chance to get that kind of big crowd reaction before the Rumble and cut a promo that gets people excited about him being a favorite to win. What do you think, Kelly?
This company loves the multi-man brawl apropos of nothing at the very end of the final Raw before the Royal Rumble.
Yes, they do.
That would be a genuinely interesting time for them. You think they're fading out because they're just, you know, 15 guys in the ring fighting for reasons that maybe do or don't exist. They're fighting because there's a Royal Rumble coming. And then we see Cody, even if we just see him on the ramp surveying what's going on in that rumble. That's a big enough moment. And then maybe he does more for the live crowd, but that's all we get, that taste on Raw. That would work as a surprise if they want to keep a surprise in the pocket for Cody.
Yeah, cool. All right, Brad, I appreciate all the topics.
Yeah, absolutely. And guys, can I say one more quick question?
Sure.
Do you think Seth has no place on this Raw's 30 show since he lost and doesn't really have a match?
I mean, I guess they can make something up or do something with him and Cody for that matter. Cody could show up and Seth could be doing a promo and he could notice Cody in the background and the camera turns around and there's Cody and Cody looks,
I mean,
they could do something like that. Yeah. Thanks, Brett. You could do some interesting things to plant some seeds with even those two, depending on what their plans are for him. All right. One more call out for calls before we go to Kyle in Baltimore, and then emails. Our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Got some good emails coming up. 951, I saw you pushed one and then dropped off. So if you want to jump back in line, we certainly will put you on. All right, Kyle, welcome. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
So I wanted to talk about the situation with the women all four. I think I'll talk about Bianca and Alexa first. I had been complaining and had some issues with Bianca Belair, her title run ever since WrestleMania. Season's been not all that interesting, and Alexa's super over. They were super hype over of Alexa wanted to beat the crap out of Bianca again, just like how they were last week or 2 weeks ago. So it's like, I guess for me is it a problem even more knowing that Becky Lynch is super over? She's like the number one baby face right now, and she is, and Bianca is just like number two, not all that interesting. What is it with Bianca that isn't really clicking with her, with her feud, especially with Bayley just recently, and even with Becky? This is not, what is that missing thing with Bianca that is hitting with me as a character perspective? As an in-ring, she's great in-ring, but her character is not all that interesting or compelling like Becky Lynch is. So what do you need to do to change that?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, Bianca didn't lean as much on the mannerisms and kind of catchphrases and signature lines tonight, but I thought she looked a little deflated by the tepid crowd response. And I think it took her out of her game a little bit, and she kind of waited for an EST chant that was just sort of scattered, and then it picked up some steam, but not a ton. And there's still just, you know, something isn't there. And I don't know if she wants to be a heel. People know about her and Montez Ford and being married, and I don't know if you want to be pushing Ford as a babyface while you go hardcore with Belair as a heel. Kelly, what do you think about her progress or lack thereof as a character compared to your expectations for her covering her intensely in her NXT time?
I don't know that I've got the biggest answer for this. I loved her in NXT, and I couldn't wait to see what it was going to be like on the main roster. And they didn't go – she never won the NXT championship, which I think a lot of people who only watch the main roster would be very surprised to find out. They got close with her a few times, and on the couple of occasions that I got to talk to people who work for the company, it was clear that at that time that she was in the company, she was – one of the two that they felt strongest about when she gets to the main roster. They were talking about her. They were talking about Rhea. And of course we've kind of seen that bear out as they've pushed both of them pretty well. Well, I mean, your mileage may vary. They pushed them both a lot. I don't know how they pushed them very well at times. But yes, I know that Bianca can effortlessly play a heel. But if she's got value, money-making value in being a babyface, I'm not – I understand why they're leaning into that. I'm not a proponent of – unless you have a really good reason, I don't like it when they mention that two people on the main roster are in a long-term relationship. I think there's everything to lose and not a whole lot to gain other than in the very short term. Because you can't put that toothpaste back in the tube very well. I wish that that wasn't something that they felt the need to talk about on the show. Just tell us, we know it's going on, but just tell us a story with them and we're along for the ride. Too long to say, I don't know exactly what the problem is with Bianca. She needs a banger of a feud, and she needs a really, really detestable heel against her.
And, yeah, just and some confidence on the microphone and just a swagger that isn't intentionally off-putting or too similar to her intentionally off-putting cockiness in NXT when she was going for heel heat. But find that sweet spot. And it's been a difficult road for her to walk out there and act like she owns the ring, but then she gets accused of, oh, you're coming across as too confident, too cocky, it's off-putting, and it's like, it feels like a no-win situation, but it isn't. There really is a third option between seeming to not be confident or seeming cocky, but inauthentic. And it's an authenticity and a sense of purpose that she can articulate and then express through body language and just the vibe she gives off and that smile and that glow that she can have. And a lot of that I do think goes to what you just said, Kelly, is having that right heel opponent and getting her really tapped into, just immersed in getting us to believe that she believes that she stands for something and she can express it and she can do so with confidence, but not have it just be twirling her braid and saying EST stuff, which just feels really worn out. So I just say don't give up, but it's still a work in progress with her. And this was 2022 is going to be a breakout year potentially for her. And I think it's been for her and Leighton Ear Bailey, a disappointment and a step back. And that gets us to Alexa Bliss and you know, what they can get out of her, presumably in a Bray Wyatt faction, if they can get more out of her. Cause you know, as Becky was talking about Bayley staying behind in NXT because she wanted to be a leader and prepare the next generation, and then we sit here and say, you know, maybe Dakota Kai or Io Sky can be used better. You know, they have to look around and figure out who is that next generation who are going to supplement the same group. I mean, it does show, Kelly, how strong that initial group in NXT was compared to how it's gone since then, and they don't have that obvious next wave. I mean, Charlotte and Becky and Bailey, that was just such a strong group. And, you know, Sasha too, but she's not in the mix at the moment. They need that next generation. I mean, let me throw to you on this, because it's a logical question. Who right now in NXT can they call up and hang better than Bianca has, or at least look like they belong and are the next generation to take over for Charlotte, Becky, and Bayley?
No one.
I don't want that. Give me a different answer. Let's rewind.
I'm really sorry, but I don't know that anyone's ready. There are some interesting names there that are, and in some cases are not being pushed a lot. There's some really, really young talent that I think can maybe get there, but they need a ton of seasoning. There are some that they're putting a lot of effort into that I think is wasted. You can hear me rant about that on the show every now and then. It really strikes me doing this show and NXT 8 years back. I do these two podcasts 14 hours apart, and when I'm doing 8 years back, it just strikes me that I'm doing a show where the men are top heavy, but underneath there are a lot of issues, a lot of secondary guys that just aren't clicking. And the women, there isn't a weak one in the bunch. Like, every single woman they've got on TV, and it's a small women's roster 8 years back, much smaller than now. But it just seemed like every one of them was showing so much potential. And every week we're in going 8 years back, there's an almost guaranteed all horsewomen match every night. And now you've got Alexa in there. She's picking up quick. I don't know why it's not clicking right now, why there's a lot of them that are iffy in the ring, and almost all of them are iffy on the mic. They're trying hard with Cora Jade. They're trying to get Roxanne Perez there. She's a good wrestler. She was a terrible talker, and she's finally kind of getting a little bit better. Lash Legend can be something as a character, but the development, while it's been there in the ring, has been extremely slow. It's just Tiffany Stratton. She is the one you could bring up almost right away. She's an okay talker when she's in her element, and she took to wrestling probably just about as quick as Kurt Angle. I was not expecting a lot when I first saw what this character was going to be, but she is, and I didn't think about her right away because she only just came back after an extended layoff. But if they wanted to pluck one female from the NXT roster who could make some kind of impact and not look like she's swimming with sharks, she's probably the one I'd pick right now.
All right, Kyle, back to you. What else have you got for us?
I just thought that it was just striking too, because I also look at Rhea too. Rhea has found herself. I'd say a different week here, but Rhea, she's been doing some good work with her character, even though she hasn't really been wrestling too much because she's been focused on the Judgment Day and she's been focusing on that. That potential, you know, I think back to what that face off between Rhea and Becky, and I'm sort of going to probably have a face off at the Rumble. Can you see that? Is Rhea one of the accepted to the role could be in that same conversation with Becky and with Alexa now? Because right now she's currently doing some good work right now with her character. What do you think Rhea's going to do headed into the Rumble and where she's going to end up throughout headed to WrestleMania, or whatever she's going to be doing?
Yeah, Kelly, in a draft, how far down does Rhea Ripley drop if you're just trying to assemble a strong women's division right now, looking ahead more than just 6 months?
Oh, I don't think very far. If I had to predict Rumble winners right now, I think that I'd think maybe Rhea has a chance here. I agree, Kyle. She's found herself in this role. They've made lots of small tweaks with her. One huge tweak when she first started in the Mae Young Classic, and she essentially was a creator wrestler. There was just nothing there. People called her a Charlotte clone, which I thought was actually too nice because she didn't have any personality to speak of and not much of a moveset. But behind the scenes, they knew that this is a very young person who was extremely hungry to be great in the business and a very hard worker. I think that she has top of the division potential in the right role, and I do think she has found that right role now. I agree with her not being in a ton of matches on TV right now. Just be that heavy and be great in the role that she's in. I think that her on-screen relationship with Dom is way more entertaining to me than I probably care to admit. I think that she definitely slots in well as a main event player for the women if they get her in the right feud. Obviously, that feud could be with Bianca, but we just talked about Bianca not being with a heel that is liked too much, and Rhea is cool, and so there's that
I
issue.
I think Rhea could help it, though.
I think maybe.
Yeah. I just have a feeling that they. I think I also think back to their first. Well, their match since what happened last year at Money in the Bank. I was like, okay, here's something that I think that Rhea can make Bianca more interesting, because Rhea is more serious and wants to be. I don't know, for some reason I get that aura from Rhea that would make Bianca more more serious, because he's has a serious opponent and the potential there. Just feel like that. If I was Bianca in that moment, I would be taking it seriously and trying to do whatever I can to make this work, so people like so fans will make her feel like she's like what she is now. So that's what I would think if they feud with each other. So
yeah, I love that. I would love the idea of her bringing out that part of Bianca that people are probably hungry to see. And we know these two mesh well together. They were the last two in the Rumble a couple of years ago. They work well together. I'd love that.
What else, Kyle?
So I'll talk about the whole Cody Rhodes stuff for me and this whole, because it's such a interesting situation, because, you know, you think that was Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins is now the biggest babyface again in the men's side again for finally after years. And then now this whole conversation with Cody Rhodes being back, is he going to win the Rumble? Is Cody Rhodes someone else? But there is someone else. It's Seth Rollins. There's potential opponents besides Rhodes to win the Rumble. So I guess my thing is that when Cody Rhodes comes back at the Royal Rumble, if he wins, because as far as Roman Reigns, he doesn't really doesn't know that Cody Rhodes even exists. And all Cody Rhodes has been talking about is him wanting to be the WWE champion. And doing it for his father. He's not really doing it for himself. Like, he's hearing it for his father, That's what he's been saying all throughout last year. And it's like, okay, well, it's kind of like the Bianca Belair situation where people want to see Bianca as champion, but then what? Rhodes wants to be the WWE champion for his father, but not for himself. So it's like, okay, well, then what? You're champion, so then what? Who are you going to be? How are you going to be a better champion than Roman Reigns, than Seth Rollins, than AJ Styles? So what makes you different with them besides you're doing it for your father? So what do you think about that aspect of it? Because everyone's so excited for Cody Rhodes to be the champion, but as a character, what do you bring to the table that the other chairs before you have it?
Kelly, your thoughts on that?
Cody and Seth feel like the two most likely Rumble winners to me. And the only problem I have with Seth is that I find it possible and believable that Cody could win that match with Roman, and I don't see it being Seth. I don't know how hot a wrestler would have to be at any given time for me to believe at this point that Roman could lose, but we've talked about this, how it's great to have a champion this strong, but it kills the doubt in most of their championship matches, and you have to build other really big attractions to make it okay that it doesn't seem like there's any doubt that they could lose. Like, I'm not even talking about the idea that Kevin Owens could win at the Royal Rumble, even though that match exists and we all know it exists. And I'm not even thinking about that right now, even though it would be a way. Actually, it's for both championships, so it wouldn't be a way to split the championships.
That's going to be a great match, too. So
yeah.
They have great chemistry. So
yeah. Oh, yeah. But those two work really well together. I'm definitely looking forward to it. But yeah, I if Seth wins, I'll be interested to see the build, because right now Seth is just a fun, amusing, and still occasionally cool character that I just don't see as being somebody who could dethrone that 2.5-year champion, whereas I do feel that with Cody, which is the main reason right now I'm saying Rhea and Cody for the Rumbles.
Yeah. Good logic. Kyle, anything else you want to bring up?
So last thing I think about, talk about the whole tag team situation with them. Keep specifically saying 2 weeks now, they've stayed up for the Raw Tag Team Championship between the Usos and the Judgment Day. I'm really convinced they're going to win next week because why else they're doing it for the Raw Tag Team Championships if they're just going for them to win the championship at on Raw itself. So, and the fact that, too, they're really hyping up Raw for next week will make a big splash for next week to have the crowd new Tag Team Champion. So the fact that they're really clamoring on that situation and everyone is expecting for Owens and Zayn to win the SmackDown Tag Team Championship because that's what that'd be a thing, even though right, Owens is on Raw. I don't know how that's going to work, but whatever. So what do you think about a real likely possibility for next week for the Judgment Day to win the Tag Team Championships because of that situation?
Yeah, some good points, Kyle. As far as that goes, it's just for the Raw titles. Priest saying we're going to bring them back where they belong. Is this just to get people more hope that they might be witness to a title change, or is this almost giving away that there's going to be a title change and the Usos will be stripped of half of their belts? And if they do that, do you like the story that tells, or the potential story that tells within the Bloodline? And is it, to complicate my question, a way to also set up or kind of lay the groundwork for Cody challenging Roman for just the Raw-based title so that they can split the belts up again, have world champs, world tag champs and world singles men's champs on both shows coming out of Mania? Kelly, your thoughts?
I'm surprised that they've kept both championships unified as long as they have. That's not the kind of thing. I'll say under Vince's creative, it probably would have changed already. Under typical older WWE creative, I feel like that would have happened already. But it really has made them just be strong champions and made for strong TV. I would have said there's no chance of a title change in this instance if it was for both championships. So I think it's very wise, even if the Usos are retaining, that they made this just for one. I don't love the idea of the Usos finally losing gold, even just half their gold, and having it be to other heels. I don't like that at all, actually. I think it deserves something bigger than that. But if they want to get Priest and Dominic into a major storyline, they could do it here. And there's all kinds of different schmazes they could do, and different people could cost the Usos the championships next week. So even if they're just the SmackDown championships, you might have something compelling going on with other baby faces. But I don't know. I'm 1,000 times more interested in this thanks to just one half of the tag team championships being on the line. But I think I'd still guess the Usos.
Yeah, me too. But the fact that only one set of the belts are on the line makes it feel more possible, and thus I think more dramatic. And the match itself can be more of a draw. The announcers didn't draw a lot of attention to it. You know, why is it just the belt? You know, the one belt they want. Why not both? Because obviously the Usos, you know, won the Raw tag titles. So yeah, I'm not sure what the sort of storyline logic is for Judgment Day wanting just those belts. All right, let's shift to email. Justin emailed, and I want to go to him first because he brought up Judgment Day. What a turnaround for Judgment Day. They're the most entertaining thing on Raw every single week. I doubt they win the tag titles next week, but man, would I consider doing a title change. Kelly, your thoughts in general on what we're seeing right now with Priest, Balor, Ripley, and Dom. I hate waiting this long to get into the fun of Dom, the ex-con, unsolicited advice to others about what life was like for him in prison and how you wouldn't survive a day and with the cellmates that I had, or and here's what you do in the prison yard. It's fun. It's real fun. Balor's got a little more swagger. I think he's having a little more fun because of this. Priest is still in a more narrow lane of excitement than I wish. There's just still that something not quite there. But even this I thought was kind of a good week for him. And, you know, you already gushed about Ripley, and deservedly so. But are we risking overestimating and heaping too much praise on Judgment Day when just a couple months ago, you know, people thought it was a pretty flat faction? I've been more of a fan of it than average, I think, anecdotally speaking. But Is there a risk of getting a little too excited because it's mostly just, you know, Dom and Rhea, and it's not really overall a strong faction?
20 minutes ago, I said you couldn't rehabilitate a faction, and Judgment Day kind of making a liar out of me. Yes, it's gotten to be so much better and so much stronger on TV. And maybe they take a page out of that book for damage control and they make more – like you don't have to change the members of the group, but give a couple of the members really interesting dynamics with each other. Have Bailey have a new dynamic with one of the other two women. And that's why they've gotten so much mileage out of the Bloodline, is they keep making interesting dynamics within the group. So sometimes the mini feuds going on within the group, sometimes, usually, the mini groups going on within the feud are more compelling than the feuds that they're actually having, because we usually know who's going to win the feuds they are in. I guess lukewarm on Judgment Day, another group where I think I like these members as much as they should be liked. I'm just, you know, Dom is Dom, but they found something that's, you know, even though he's in this dark, sinister faction where he can be this kind of clueless doofus, and it somehow works. It's amazing that he's been in, a couple months ago, I was saying the most compelling TV he's ever been part of was the Eddie Guerrero-Rey Mysterio feud. But now he's kind of found something to do that is more interesting. And it's almost gutsy to say that you like something Dominic is doing, because he gets so excoriated by fans in general. But I think they've found a valuable use for him, and I think that this group that could seem dead on arrival is not. The only thing weird is that Finn is ostensibly the leader and he feels like the tacked on member. So I wouldn't hate seeing Finn getting to something bigger, like the others are part of.
Number two, as a huge Alexa Bliss fan, I appreciate her being in a title program, but I'm so confused by this Uncle Howdy stuff. So after tonight, are they aligned together, or is Uncle Howdy giving her a false sense of security? A very confusing angle, and I'm really hoping for a good payoff that makes sense. Kelly, your thoughts on this, and do you expect a payoff that makes sense? Do you have a payoff in mind that you think makes sense?
A good payoff is possible. A payoff that makes sense, I think, is asking a lot. These kind of storylines, they just seem to think that people will say, it's weird, wasn't it awesome? As long as people think it's cool, then I guess it made sense. I'm not trusting that it will make a ton of sense, maybe more so than during Bray's first run. And we don't even know how close to this storyline Bray is even supposed to be considered, but I wouldn't be surprised if we get to where we're going and we say, I guess, and that is the best thing we can say about it. I keep my expectations low on these storylines, and it helps a lot. I'll say that much.
John Kelly wrote and said, and this was in response to me pointing out, so I'll point this out, that during the brawl, Alexa Bliss just happened to be lined up, or Belair just happened to be lined up to see the Uncle Howdy image. And they were brawling, apparently, you know, randomly in the crowd, and he just happened to be in the corridor where they brawled to. Now, I have more of a problem with it when we're not in the realm of sort of a supernatural gimmick where you sort of relax the rules or you go crazy when it comes to that. Like, I, the idea that Uncle Howdy can just sort of show up magically wherever they brawl to instantly, I'm more in favor of than if it weren't an Uncle Howdy type character who has that kind of mystical quality. But it still took me out of the moment. Like, what are the odds that she's positioned perfectly to see him show up in the fog and smoke? So I pointed that out. And so anyway, John says, come on, the entire thing is stupid. the same old B-level spooky gags. Please take some time each week to appropriately rip apart these embarrassing Bray-related segments. Callie, how do you feel about that aspect of this? And just in the specific of where Uncle Howdy showed up, but also the tone and how it fits into WWE, and if there's a better way to execute it, or you think they're pulling it off?
John thinking this is B-level might make him one of the biggest fans of this storyline.
there is that.
I give a longer leash to this than I would have when I wanted to solve all of wrestling's problems 10, 15, 20 years ago. But I just think that when you open this kind of character, this kind of storyline, and you allow, and everything has to live in a different world, it's very tough to get these wrestlers into storylines against people who aren't part of this. It feels like they have to live in a different reality than these other characters. Like with Papa Shango, once he was done with the story with Ultimate Warrior, what do you do? What do you do with him? You bring him into the world of somebody who's just been in a way more grounded storyline, and eventually you just have to scrap it and say, okay, now you're Kama, the Ultimate Fighting Machine.
Yep.
And then you're the Godfather, and now you're a Hall of Famer. But I just don't know. It's every time they go back to these creepy, weird characters, I think, you know, some of this might be memorable. Some of this might be okay. I don't fret too much about the horror movie shot where all of a sudden she's facing Uncle Howdy. I certainly noticed it and thought, well, they went for contrived, but I wasn't angry about it. I just think way more about, like, how do you transition any of these characters into, like, how many people can Uncle Howdy feud with and have this thing work? I don't know about making a world this different from the rest of the wrestling world.
Yeah. I mean, I gave them just personally latitude during the pandemic. I'm like, this is the time to experiment. You don't have a live audience. You can do different things, and you can put a lot of elbow grease and production work into cinematic matches and otherworldly stuff. And just, you know, the rules are different. But these are kind of – this isn't outlandishly different than Papa Shango and some of that stuff. It's just, you know, it's a different vibe. They're going for a different vibe. But in terms of breaking from the narrative structure of the rest of the show, it's not that far of a break from anything that they've done in the past. And I think they just think it's baked into what WWE is, and the fan base is willing to accommodate for that flexibility, or at least not be so offended to rebel and stop watching. But it's hard to measure. Okay, let's go to JB in Detroit. He goes, the Becky Bailey segment came off as a dud to me. The crowd seemed rather subdued, and some of the material was rather awkward. I think that Becky did her best, but yet again, Bailey just seems to be hitting the best of material in this feud. Is certainly not all it could be. Anything to add on that, Kelly? I mean, we certainly talked a lot about that.
Yeah, I obviously agree. It's hard to get inspired when the words on the page don't inspire you.
Yeah. Two, does it seem to be a bit of odd timing that loading up Raw 30 and having it on as the go-home show for the Rumble? I get that it's the first Monday in a long time without any NFL or NCAA football. I don't know what would be odd. There seems to be a bit of odd timing to have it as a go-home show for the Rumble. It seems like great timing. You want people to watch the Rumble, and now people, in theory, will tune in to Raw and in big numbers. Maybe he's saying it's there's so much going on with Raw 30, they won't have time to promote the Rumble. But, I mean, I think they've, you know, it's the Rumble's about the Rumble, and it's about Reigns KO, which would be primarily the story told on SmackDown. And, you know, those are the two biggest matches. Anything else I think they can cover amidst the legends and big matches on the three-hour Raw next week. I mean, they do have 3 hours. Kelly, I don't know how you interpret that question for a comment from JB, but any thoughts on that?
I feel like he's asking, is it doing a short shrift to Rumble build? But I as long as they give a little bit of sizzle to those matches, the Royal Rumble match sells itself. They could announce 10 more wrestlers for the Rumble next week, or they could announce none, and people would be exactly as excited either way, because it's the Rumble. It's going to be fine.
He says, do you think that the NFL adding an extra game to the season and making the final game of the wild card weekend on a Monday night is hurting the bill to the Rumble at all? As always, love the show, and everyone go VIP. Thank you, JB. Yeah, this is different for them. They don't have January all to themselves. You know, the super wild card weekend, playoff game tonight, college football championship, and an extra week of the season has changed January for them in terms of Rumble. But SmackDown is their A show now. It's their main show. It's the biggest audience. But it doesn't help that they had to go against the Cowboys against Tom Brady tonight.
Yeah, and even in a blowout, people wanted to see this because it could be the end of Tom Brady. So it is odd that they have to dance around this schedule, but the Rumble's on a Saturday. Is that part of the reason? I'm not 100% sure, but I think they'll make do and the Rumble will be fine.
All right, one more email and then a couple things we haven't covered, and then we'll wrap up here. Zach in Texas says, Triple H had another meeting this time with Raw Talent where he tried to reassure them that everything is going to be okay. Forgive me if I'm not reassured. I don't think the talent is all that reassured either. How could they be? Stephanie held a meeting for the same purpose with corporate employees and then resigned days later. Hunter has already admitted to discussing creative with Vince, which is a slippery slope. The talent should be very nervous about what's going on and what the future holds. I have to bring up Dominic Mysterio, who they've now decided to inflict upon us twice a week. I still can't take him seriously. He just comes across as a guy playing the role of an annoying twerp, whereas someone like Hook comes across as legit. Maybe if Dom suplexes Omos, I'll change my mind. We're going to have to agree to disagree on Dom, and even more so now than ever. He is just a fantastic character, and I just don't think you get what he's going for, or it's just not your thing, which is fine. But I when you say you can't take him seriously, you're not supposed to. That's the point.
Says he's an annoying twerp. That's what we're supposed to take from what he's doing.
Yeah,
that's the role. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. Couple other things, and if you have anything else you want to add, you can too. Otherwise, we'll wrap up after this. But Bronson Reed, I thought he looked dominant and formidable and impressive, and I thought the announcers really put him over. Is that a sign of him possibly becoming a major player in 2023, Kelly?
Sorry, you cut out for just a second. Did you say Lashley or
no, Bronson Reed?
Oh, well, we know Triple H likes Bronson. He gave him a pretty good push in NXT before he was turfed with many, many other people. He went over to Japan, did some pretty inspired work, was in a pretty good spot, but he was working without a contract. I've probably seen more of this wrestler than just about anybody because he was in NXT for a long time, saw every match. He was in New Japan for a long time, saw every match there too. And he's really grown as a strong style performer to really know how to wrestle like a giant and not just a Bam Bam Bigelow. It's valuable to have a Bam Bam Bigelow, but we're kind of in an era where every big guy is trying to be Bam Bam. And Bronson makes for a really good heel brute. And New Japan loved him. They put him over Kazuchika Okada. They really, really love this guy. So I think that Triple H probably likes him quite a bit, but they're still in the early stages of give him a little bit more to do. And if he really shows up and shows out in those moments, continue to give him just a little bit more.
I want to will this into happening. I want Elias and Ezekiel to both be in the Royal Rumble this year, Kelly. I want them to announce them ahead of time or not. It works either way. Elias is talking about being in it. Elias can enter early and get eliminated. He can go in the back and allegedly shave his beard, although I'm still not sure they're not separate people. And Ezekiel can have a shot at winning the Rumble. I want that. And if they do a cheesy split screen like a 1970s TV show where the evil twin showed up and they would do the, you know, two the same actor would play both parts and they do a cheesy split screen, I'm even for that. But I want in some form or fashion, there's multiple ways you can pull it off, both Ezekiel and Elias in the Royal Rumble this year. Are you with me?
I am. And extra points if after Ezekiel goes to the ring, we just go real quick to the back and we see watching on a monitor Triple H with Mick Foley, and Foley says, "Oh, I don't know about this." And then they go back. I love Mick's story about telling Dewey that he was in it three times, and Dewey said, "You had three shots and you didn't win." Like, that was Dewey's takeaway from Mick being in the Royal Rumble three times. I suppose Ezekiel would have to be second because of the beard issue. If you're going to use one spot on Elias, and I get if he doesn't quite make the cut, if you're going to use one, you have to use both. Absolutely.
Yeah. And are Chad Gable and Otis baby faces yet, or is this more of a circumstantial situation? And what do you think? How do you think they are best utilized in 2023?
I don't mind these guys continuing to be gatekeepers, but on the face side, and have them win just enough or get just enough of, in the way of hot tags. I think that these guys really excite people because they both bring very different and very fun moments to their matches. In watching the match today, I was a little surprised that they haven't turned already. But I guess Shush doesn't seem like a babyface thing to do.
Well, you suck. Kurt Angle, I mean, you know, crowd chanting, "You suck," 10,000 people saying "you suck" to Kurt Angle, and that's carried over as a babyface. I mean, Shush can work. It can be Shush to heels who are, you know, Baron Corbin's yapping too long, and Chad Gable walks out and the crowd goes Shush with him. I mean, I think you can totally make it work.
Yeah, I think it's almost working that way now. And I'd be on board for them moving forward. I'm sorry, I'm thinking so much about Ezekiel, and what if they were the first two guys in the Royal Rumble? Elias comes out number one, and then number two, Ezekiel's music plays. And for a moment, we're like, what the hell's going to happen?
You know, Ezekiel is such a better worker than Elias. I'm still not convinced there's not two of them. And the joke all along is that there really are two of them, and they're going to, you know, for years pretend they aren't. But in reality, there are two, and they're going to just shock us at the right moment with two of them.
That would be their best swerve ever. I would.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm.
I'd be all about it.
If you're an indie star and you look at all like Elias, get the plastic surgery. You got a gig waiting for you.
Yes, indeed. Brian Lee was the other Undertaker. You can make it work out there, folks.
Yep. Now the name. Who is the alternate Sting? I've had his name recall consistently forever. Not Fisher.
He was. His dad was a baseball player, right? Was it Torborg?
Oh, no, Jeff Farmer. That's what I'm thinking of.
Oh, Jeff Farmer. Who am I thinking of with Torborg? He was the Kiss Demon.
So, there's a job waiting out there maybe for someone. Anyway, Kelly, anything else you want to sneak in before we close? Sign off here.
Oh, I think we pretty well got it. Yeah, very excited for the Royal Rumble. I am the biggest Rumble fan I know, and I know that a lot of people are big Rumble fans. Looking forward to seeing a bunch of them before I watch this year's, and hope there's a lot more doubt on it than last year's Brock and Ronda fiasco. So
awesome.
Yeah, a good show this week, and I'm glad I caught it in real time.
Good to have you on. Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you so much, Wade. I'll see you soon.
Kyle, thank you for sticking around for the rest of the show. Usually you hang up right after your call. He just hung up, so he might not have heard me say thank you for listening. But I always know it's Kyle. As soon as we're done with him, he hangs up. But maybe he's holding out that we're going to go back to him. Maybe that's the only reason he stuck around. But anyway, thanks, Kyle. Thanks to all our callers, our emailers. We will talk to you Wednesday night on the post show. Join us that after AEW Dynamite. And until then, Wade Keller on behalf of Kelly, signing off for tonight.